Johnny Holmes' daughter, Anita Berlanga, a Chicago businesswoman, still finds it hard to believe what her father went through. What saddens her most is that racism probably kept him from pursuing a legal career or a career as an artist after the war. She says, "I learned from my father how ridiculously hypocritical this country is. They took good, honest men and treated them poorly before and after the war." In the rage of combat, Holmes often made a deal with God. "Get me out of this, and I will be a better, decent person." God didn't have to worry about Johnny Holmes, but he might have spent a little more time with some of the people who were back in Chicago, far from the front lines. One of them was working at the Foot Brothers factory in Chicago when Holmes went looking for work, now a 25-year-old battle-scarred veteran, down to 98 pounds as a result of lingering problems from injuries suffered when he was hit by shrapnel from landmines. It was Johnny Holmes' first stop after getting out of uniform. As soon as he entered the Foot office, he remembers to this day the woman in charge of hiring looking up and saying, "What are you doing here? We don't hire niggers. Get out of here." Welcome home, Sergeant Holmes. Shortly, however, he heard about a company that maybe had openings for machinists. He went early the next morning, and he was startled to find a black personnel director at Doler Jarvis Corporation. Holmes had never seen a black man in a white-collar job. The personnel director said he didn't have anything at the moment, but Holmes should leave an application, and he'd get a call if anything opened up. Johnny didn't leave it to chance. He showed up early again the next morning, and again the morning after that, politely refusing to accept the personnel man's assurance he would call when a job developed. When it was clear that Holmes would do this until he got a job, the personnel man looked at Holmes, sighed, and said, "Okay, report here Monday morning." Holmes worked as a machinist until the factory closed in 1951. Then he went to work for the city of Chicago and a variety of jobs until his retirement in 1985. "It was a good life," he says. "He was treated well on the job." However, Johnny Holmes and his fellow black veterans were still living a lot of their days as second-class citizens. Holmes married a white woman during his days at Doler Jarvis, and they stayed married for 38 years until she died in 1985. It was not always easy being a racially mixed couple in Chicago. Johnny can remember many occasions when he sent his wife, Louise, into a restaurant to bring the food out to the car rather than risk the wrath of some bigot who wouldn't approve of their loving but black and white relationship. For all of his combative ways, Johnny Holmes decided he wouldn't personally bow to the inherent frustration of discrimination. As he puts it today, "If I let all of the negatives intervene, I would never have achieved anything. I kept focused on what I wanted to do, which was to make money, provide for my family." Holmes, however, did support the civil rights movement through his church, and he recalls with pride meeting Dr. Martin Luther King and joining him in his Chicago marches. He also set out to advance his station in life his own way, as a real estate investor. His specialty was low-income rental apartments and buildings in black neighborhoods. At one time, he owned as many as three buildings divided up into rental units. It was as landlord and as a black man who had overcome so much on his own that he came to hate the welfare system that grew so fast in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. "It just killed ambition," said Holmes. "I had all of these tenants who in their late 20s had never worked a day in their life. They just waited around for that government check. No incentive." Holmes speaks of the welfare system in the same tone of voice that he uses to describe his son's cocaine problems. Disdain. He's plainly disgusted his son, who makes good wages working in the oil drilling business in Louisiana, gave into drugs, leaving behind a child in Chicago. Holmes wants nothing to do with his son. He's no longer welcome in his home. What Holmes went through during the war and after strengthened his already tenacious character, and he sees no need to compromise his standards for anyone, even family members. Although Johnny Holmes' unit, the 761st Tank Unit, was not involved in the liberation of the notorious concentration camps at Buchenwald and Dachau, according to its own official records, it was in that area. There's been some confusion about that over the years, and it lingers to this day. The 761st did participate in freeing the 15,000 Jews interred in a branch of Mauthausen, another concentration camp in Austria. So the 761st soldiers did have firsthand knowledge of the depravity of the Third Reich's racial attitudes. As indefensible as America's attitude was toward blacks, Germany's ultimate solution was beyond belief. Who better to put all that in perspective than Johnny Holmes? So he's always willing, when asked by Jewish organizations or schools, to speak about the horrors that he saw in World War II. In his 70s, however, he may be mellowing some. He's much more inclined to help out at his church or take his Lincoln Town Car on long driving trips than to sit around and remember the bad old days, or speak of the two-front battle he was forced to fight, Germans in front of him, racial bigots at his back. Now he can say with pride and confidence, "I am proud of the way I live my life. I was a good soldier. I serve my country. It is my country, right or wrong. I'm still waiting to find out what God really wants me to do." None of us can ever contribute enough.